Right. And scalpel. Severing the anterior valve. Clamp. There. Nice and tight. Tweezers. Just get that bit out. There we go. Can you mop my brow? Thank you, nurse.
You're welcome.
No, you don't have to. All right. Okay, and if I just retract that flappy bit there, you can see it's Crowley time.
Crowley time!
Hello, and welcome to Crowley Time with me, Tom Crowley. With me, Tom Crowley. I'd like to begin this episode with an address to you, the little child who tripped over in the park in front of us and started crying. Now, I know we saw you fall and we saw you cry, and we smiled. Some of us even laughed quietly to ourselves. But we're sorry. It wasn't your pain that we found funny, nor your feeling of humiliation in that moment. It was merely that we remembered so vividly and so fondly being you, falling in the park and crying. When that truly was the worst thing that had ever happened to us. We see you experience that moment, that nadir, that gulf, and we laugh because we know. We laugh also because we know that mum or dad or guardian or friend will be along shortly to help you up, to coo and comfort. And before you know it, the worst thing that's ever happened to you will be forgotten, and there will be running and playing and desserts, and life will carry on. Until the next worst thing that's ever happened to you comes and goes. Are you lying in the park right now, weeping over a skinned knee? Then let this episode be mum, or dad, or guardian, or friend, picking you up off the ground and drying your eyes. Up you get. Come on now. That's it.
Thank you all for being here. My client, Boxer, has asked you all here because he feels he must address in person, honestly and directly, the allegations in question. My client maintains that he is a blameless bystander in the events concerned and is prepared to field any questions you may have as long as they pertain to the matter at hand. I will now yield the microphone to my client, Boxer.
Thanks, Jerry. I will shortly be taking questions from the press gathered here, but first I would like to summarise my version of events. At 8:12 a.m. on Tuesday the 3rd of March 2020, my master, Hugo Billings, gave me strict instructions not to get up on the dinner table because my paws are dirty and would make a mess. He then left the house for what I at the time believed would be the rest of the day. Mr. Billings, having forgotten his car keys, then re-entered the abode and, according to his account, witnessed me standing on top of the dinner table, having seemingly completely disregarded his instructions within 3 seconds of his departure.
Mr. Boxer, did you get up on the table? Did you get up on the table?
No questions at this time.
Don't worry, Jerry, I'll field this one. Ms. Hammer, I will be addressing precisely those allegations in this statement.
Duncan Tremaine, Sky News. Mr. Boxer, is this a repeat of the poo on the living room carpet debacle?
Those rumours were never substantiated, and I shall not be addressing them at this time. If I may, I would now like to offer my version of events on the morning of Tuesday the 3rd. Shortly after Mr. Billings closed the front door, I became aware of a bad man in the house. I do not know how he entered the abode, but using my keen guard dog instincts, I quickly ascertained that this bad man had indeed gained entry. Making efforts to investigate the intrusion, I went into the adjoining room, the living room, and saw indeed that there was a bad man in the house.
Graham Trunk, BBC News, can you describe this bad man?
Great question, Graham. Yes, I can confirm that the bad man was bald, with a sickle-shaped scar on his left cheek. He wore a black jumper and an eye patch. He had a hook for a hand, and he was 7'9". The bad man in question, on seeing me, a very good boy and very responsible guardian of the household, panicked and kicked me out of the way. The arc of my trajectory after being kicked ended on the top of the dining table, And as luck would have it, the very moment I landed on the table happened to be the very moment that Mr. Billings re-entered the domicile.
Why didn't Mr. Billings see anyone else in the house?
It is my belief that the bad man with the eye patch, having been adequately barked at by myself, beat a hasty retreat out of the house.
Mr. Boxall, can you shed any light on why there was no sign of forced entry?
I have been very consistent on this point ever since the event, and my position remains that he must have gone out of a window or something.
Mr. Boxer, Graham Trunk, BBC News again. Bad dog. Bad dog.
No, thank you, thank you. I refute that entirely and would like to restate my position that I am a good boy, a very, very good boy.
Do you have any comment on the nanny cam footage?
I'm sorry?
Excuse me, my client is not aware of this footage. Can you be more specific?
I'm getting this from the subreddit Naughty Doggos. A video has been posted there, which appears to be taken from Mr. Billings' nanny cam. It shows what is clearly Mr. Boxer waiting patiently for Mr. Billings to leave the house and then immediately leaping up from his position on the floor onto the top of the dining room table.
Well.
There are many user comments to read just a few. That is very naughty. Lol, no shame, and... what a very naughty papa, look at his little ears.
Well, you can't. That could...
My client will not be taking any more questions at this time. Come on, Boxer. Come on, let's get out of here.
But I'm innocent.
Hello, this is Crowley Time with me, Tom Crowley, with me, Tom Crowley. We can't take your call at the moment. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hello, is that Tom Crowley? I just wanted to let you know I've seen you outside of my house every hour of the day and night, taking off your underpants and your trousers and showing your rear passage to my collection of antique garden gnomes. Now, can you honestly tell me you think that's appropriate behaviour?
These are the diaries of Link Tangent, space cartographer, faithfully maintained and preserved in case I get hit in the head at some point and want to know who I am and what I'm doing. Link's log, space year 3, space month, hamburger. As a result of my adventures on planet Gilgon, where I was exposed to a mysterious purple goo that had consumed all of the planet's inhabitants...
See Crowley Time Episode 5, True Believers!
I was ordered to return to the Galactic Central Command mothership for study and quarantine. This is routine for any and all encounters with hazardous alien materials, but I couldn't help but feel irritated that my charting of the Gamma Quadrant was being interrupted, and that I would have to delay my annual trip to Prostitute Alon 4. There was also a complication, the small friend I had made along the way, and I mean made, quite literally. While on planet Gelgon, I had laid a large clutch of eggs, which hatched into a litter of small lizards with my distressingly human face. Most of them scattered off into the distance, but one of them had found its way into my ship before takeoff, and was now an unofficial passenger on my mission. My first instinct was to start freaking out and drop the hybrid creature into the ship's nuclear fusion drive, but then he looked up at me with his me face and called me Mama, and my cold heart melted. This horrifying man-lizard was my child, and I would be his space parent. I named him Little Dribbles. But what would Galactic Central Command make of him? Generally, copulation with exotic alien races was strongly encouraged, largely because the GCC realized early on that there was no way of stopping us, and if we were doing this, we might as well do it with gusto. On the other hand, regulations state that all previously undiscovered alien lifeforms must be submitted for immediate dissection and labeling, and I wasn't prepared to let that happen to my only son, even if he did have strange little scaly balls. As I Tokyo drifted my spaceship into the landing bay, I was gritting my teeth and pinching my nipples for a fight. Fortunately, once Little Dribbles and I had been transferred to the inspection bay, the officer on duty took one look at my lizard boy and said, "Oh yeah, we get those little lizard guys all the time, mostly because McGillicuddy can't keep his tongue dick in his mouth pants." Suddenly, I was set upon by a flashback sequence. I was back at the GCC New Space Year's Eve party, and an unknown chameleonoid was ramming his meter-long tongue down my throat.
See Crowley Time Episode 3. Excelsior!
This, I realized, must have been the opportunistic chameleonoid skank McGillicuddy. It was he who had impregnated me and fathered Little Dribbles. I was set upon by myriad questions. Where was McGillicuddy now? Did he realize what he'd done? And could I sue him for child support? These questions were temporarily shelved, however, because at that very moment, a mysterious nozzle emerged from the wall opposite and fired a laser beam which instantaneously dissolved my spacesuit, leaving me naked as the Horseshoe Nebula. I made a half-hearted effort to cover my butcher's shop window and my little man tits with my hands, and then suddenly the floor opened up beneath us, and little Dribbles and I were sent screeching down a long tube, my bare buttocks making a sound like a balloon fucking a windshield as they skidded against the metal walls. The tube fired me out of its back end like a big pink turd, and I found myself face down in a small, empty, white room. I peeled myself off the cold floor and searched about myself in a panic. Had little Dribbles survived the fall? Relief. He was sitting in the corner picking his human nose with a sharp, scaly claw. I advised caution, which little Dribbles disregarded entirely. It was then that I noticed the computer terminal built into the wall, the only feature in an otherwise featureless space. I tapped the screen experimentally. A voice responded. You are in quarantine. Please select from the following options. A set of buttons appeared. Water. Nutritional paste. Complete set of Twilight novels. 12 billion hours of true crime podcasts. Complain about quarantine on social media. Record journal. After a day as eventful as this, I knew exactly what I had to do. And after smearing my entire body with nutritional paste and reading all the Twilight books, I began recording this log entry. Only 3 space weeks and 6 space days of quarantine to go. Normally I would fear for my sanity under this extreme isolation, but as long as I've got a lizard with my own human face here to keep me company, I'm sure I'll pull through. This is Napoleon Bonaparte, Emperor of France, signing off.
Hello, I'm Rory Stewart. I'm running to be Mayor of London. And I'm afraid.
Hi. I'm Jordan, from the National Blood Drive Association. Did you know that every 3 seconds someone, somewhere, needs donor blood? It might be surprising, but it's true. Some say they find the idea of blood donation a little scary, but in reality, giving blood is an entirely safe and carefully monitored process. Here to tell us more about it is the head of our European outreach operation, Mikkel.
Blood!
Mikkel, you're in charge of ensuring that our European wing is securing the donations it needs to help those millions of patients, isn't that right?
I must have blood!
That's right, that's right. Hard-working people just like Mikkel here...
Sweet blood!
...are working tirelessly around the clock just to get the message out to you, ordinary people like you, to let you know that you could save a life today.
Nectar of life, sap of the human branch!
Because as it stands, there is no way in...
Give me blood!
...in the known reach of science to produce synthetic blood...
Blood!
...or a replacement for blood.
Blood!
So for all transfusion patients out there right now... Their only hope is ordinary lifesavers just like you, donating blood...
The red humor of humanity! I must have it!
...out of the goodness of their hearts...
Heart! Surging, pumping blood!
...safe in the knowledge that...
Dripping, tangy blood!
I'm sorry, can we cut?
What's wrong?
Mikkel, I'm just worrying that this approach might come across as a little... intimidating to prospective donors?
What do you mean? I need blood! Give me blood!
I don't want to step on your toes here, but I don't think viewers are going to respond well to this kind of promotion.
I don't know what you mean. It goes down very well in Transylvania.
Does it?
No, if anything, they're absolutely terrified. Blood!
Okay.
Thick, rich blood!
Okay, shut it down, shut it all down.
You, at home, I must have blood! Give me your blood!
Is this St. David's Hospital? I just wondered if there was any update on my case about the object, the medium-sized object, which is lodged in an area. I just wondered if there's been any update about when I might come in to have it removed. Any update at all? Well, thanks, bye.
Hello to all my loyal fans out there. This is Paul Williams, best known as the composer and lyricist of A Muppet Christmas Carol, and as the voice of Tengi the Sassy Ostrich in the straight-to-video Disney film The Lion King 6, Simba's Tax Investigation. Recently I was contacted by the good people at MGM who asked if I would be interested in contributing a theme song for the upcoming 25th James Bond film, No Time to Die. Well, as you probably already know, mine wasn't the song they went for, darn it. But in the spirit of goodwill at this difficult time, I've been given special permission to share my original demo recording with you fine people. I hope you enjoy it, and that it leaves you, well, more stirred than shaken.
I played my hand and rolled my dice. I made my stand and won't think twice. Like I knew I should.
Like I knew I should.
I laid my heart out on the line and told the world I'm feeling fine. Like I knew I would.
Like I knew I would.
I thought I'd taken my last knock. I watched the clock and waited for the chime. I'm out of time, 'cause I've got no time to die and no love to lose. That's the life I choose. No time to die and no love to lose. Ladies, lies and booze. I slid off down the same old road. I'm carrying a heavy load like I always do.
Like I always do.
And when the path was all but strode, I went back to the same abode that I always knew.
That I always knew.
I lay myself down on the bed, I hang my head and beg the sun to shine and drink my wine. 'Cause I've got no time to die and no love to lose. That's the life I choose. No time to die and no love to lose. Ladies, lies and booze.
Hey, who are you?
The name's Williams. Paul Williams.
Oh, okay.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Williams. I expect you to finish this song.
You got it, comrade.
No time to die and no love to lose. That's the life I choose. No time to die and no love to lose. Ladies, lies and booze.
Well, there you have it, the Bond theme that never was. MGM did share with me some of their concerns about the theme when they turned it down. First, that the popular character James Bond famously drinks martinis, not wine, and that they had never given me permission to write myself a scene to perform within the actual song. But still, we live and we learn. Maybe for Bond 26, eh, listeners? Take care now.
There we are. Back on your feet. Back on top. No need to cry. Do you want an ice cream? Of course, I can't always be there to pick you up when you fall, but if you remember that child falling down in the park, if you remember the first time that you overcame the worst thing that had ever happened to you, then maybe, just maybe, you'll get through it the next time. I believe in you. More so than ever, I hope you're all well and surviving under the stresses of self-isolation. I'm very fortunate, yes, this is mostly going to be sincere, I'm really sorry, very fortunate in that I can produce this program and do some other aspects of my work from home. But like many people, the coronavirus pandemic does pose a threat to my work, and hence my income, and hence eating, and hence being alive enough to make this podcast. So, if you enjoy this program and you are considering becoming a Patreon supporter, there has genuinely never been a better time. You can sign up at patreon.com/CrowleyTime and support me in making this program for only $2 per episode. Plus, you can claim your supporter reward for this month, an MP3 download of Paul Williams' rejected theme for No Time to Die, with bonus cover art for the single. But of course, it's not just me in this leaky boat. If you're like me, you consume dozens of hours of podcasts, tweets, articles, and videos by creators who are producing their work independently. So if you're able, I strongly urge that you consider slinging those makers and doers a bit of pocket change to keep them afloat. And if you're watching the pennies, help them some other free way, like by sharing their work, giving them nice reviews on their respective platforms, or just sending them a message to say that you like what they do. Trust me, it all helps. And if 5 hours of free top-quality audio drama would help you with your social distancing, make sure to keep listening after this episode's credits to hear where to get it. The next episode will be released as soon as an extremely wealthy person notices any difference to their life as a result of the global pandemic. So make sure to subscribe, so you'll be alerted at the precise moment that happens. Everything you've just heard was made by me, Tom Crowley, except for the Link Tangent incidental music, which was by Jeremy Fisher. Thanks, Jeremy. Please submit all praise, questions, or complaints to @atomcrowley on Twitter. To help me fund my mission to break into all the hoarders' houses and steal back all the toilet paper, go to patreon.com/crowleytime and become a supporter today. And remember, wash your hands. There's no joke here, but do actually seriously wash your hands, please.
Surprise, true believers, it's me again, back thanks to the comedy Rule of Three. I just had to pop in to tell you all about Murmurs, the new supernatural anthology drama series from BBC Sounds. Nuff said. Except that I will also say that Murmurs consists of 10 twisted tales from a host of incredible new radio drama writers, including Tom Crowley, the very author of this stupid podcast. He wrote episode 1, titled Over and Out. But let me tell you, the imagination that's gone into this whole show reminds me of the kooky ideas that were flying around in my head when I created some of my most iconic characters. Iodine Boy, The Amazing Dave, Screwloose the Nutty Robot, Boob Window, Bob the Reverse Engineer, Askance Lad, Premature Withdrawal, Angry Martin, Ambrosia the Gelatinous, Plate of Salad, Almond Milk Man, Wheel of Cheese, Guy in a Hat, The Sexual...
For the past 6 months, BBC Cymru Wales have been working with some of the best talent from the UK audio drama world to create a 10-part anthology series for BBC Sounds called Murmurs.
Murmurs from BBC Sounds and BBC Radio Wales.
Hi, my name's Ella Watts, and I want to talk to you about Murmurs. Murmurs is a brand new podcast made by BBC Cymru Wales for BBC Sounds. It's a drama anthology series, which means that the episodes are standalone short stories, although they are all set within the same magical universe. In terms of what it feels like and what it sounds like, think like Magical Black Mirror, Inside Number 9, or The Twilight Zone. Every story is a little bit scary, but also kind of a revelation or epiphany in some way.
All 10 episodes of the series are available to stream and listen to right now. The first episode features a script written by Tom Crowley.
Tom Crowley from Wooden Overcoats and Victoriosity.
Stars Katrina Allen from The Tower and Middle Below, and produced and directed by David Devereaux.
And David Devereaux from Tin Can Audio, which is responsible for such awesome shows as Middle Below, Tin Can, and The Tower.
That's me, I did those.
Hello, my name's Tom Crowley. I'm a writer on Murmurs from BBC Sounds and BBC Radio Wales. My episode is the first episode, which is about an American soldier in the Second World War who died at the Battle of Carentan in France, and a refugee advocate in the present day called Kim. And what those two have to do with each other, you'll have to listen to Murmurs to find out.
James Robinson is the head of BBC Radio Drama Wales, and he's also in charge of Murmurs. He brought together a team of writers, including Janina Mathewson from Within the Wires, to kind of run the operation, which was a collaboration between a bunch of independent new voices. So we've got Tom Crowley, from Wooden Overcoats and Victoriosity, Chris and Jen Sugden from Victoriosity, Beth Crane from We Fix Space Junk. In addition to that, James Robinson and the whole team worked with the BBC Wales Writers' Room to give a platform to new writers from that organisation too. So we've got Enno Mavon, we've got Jesse Schwenk, and we've got Greer Ellison. And all of these writers are really promising, interesting new voices in the space who've got something to say, and I think you're going to want to hear it.
So I had a whole script written about how great the series is and how it's an important moment for the UK independent audio fiction scene. But then Ella sent me her tape, and it was frankly much better than what I'd written. So take it away, Ella.
We've got an excitingly diverse cast of characters and also creators involved with this project, which means that there are going to be queer characters and queer romances. There are people of colour. There are people talking about issues like immigration and gender. And overall, kind of just talking about what it's like to be a person in a world that is sometimes confusing, sometimes scary, and sometimes beautiful. I think that Murmurs is A, just a really good thing to listen to that I think you're going to enjoy. It's an exciting mystery. Sometimes it's scary, sometimes it's not. And it will probably make you cry. It has made me cry. It will definitely make you laugh. But I also want you to understand that this is a really exciting moment for independent podcast creators. The BBC is a big deal around the world, but especially in the British Isles, especially when it comes to radio and audio generally as a medium. So the fact that the BBC has reached out to the independent podcast community to work with the indie audio fiction movement is really, really cool. This is a chance for your favourite podcasters to be taken a little bit more seriously by professional media. It's a chance for them to show people what they've got and to be heard by more people than have ever heard them before. And so if you can and if you'd like to, we really need and would appreciate all the support you can lend. Please tweet or use Instagram or just generally get on social media and use the hashtag BBC Murmurs. Tweet and message BBC Sounds at BBC Sounds and tell them how much you're enjoying it and what you like about it. Please encourage them to work more with indie voices like this. I think that the way forward is for us to work together and not apart, and this is one way to do that and to encourage others to do the same. So please give Murmurs a listen. I think you'll like it. And that's all from me. Thanks very much.
Personally, for me, it's been a dream working on this show. I had the opportunity to work with some of my favourite audio fiction creators, as well as record something in the absolutely amazing studio space with the fantastic team at BBC Radio Cymru Wales in Cardiff. I'm very proud of this wonderfully weird thing that we've created, and as with all audio fiction, I hope people listen to it. So please, check out Murmurs from BBC Sounds, and thank you for listening.